Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, Hour 2. And what an honor and a joy for me to have Howard Zinn on the program during this hour. And I can't imagine that anybody listening doesn't know about Howard Zinn, but maybe for the one or two who don't know enough, let me just say that he is an award-winning historian of long and very esteemed standing, a political scientist, a playwright, an activist, a frequent lecturer, and a very prominent anti-war critic. He's also a professor emeritus of political science at Boston University. He's a prolific writer. He's the author of 20 books, if my math is right. And his classic work, if listeners haven't read it, Howard keeps updating it from time to time. It really is a classic work. I've bought about 4 copies myself to hand out to other people. A People's History of the United States. Unless you had Howard Zinn as a professor, you didn't learn this back in school, but you sure learn it from A People's History of the United States. A rare text like this that turned into a million seller. So much going on, Howard, and you sent me an article that we can get into a little bit called Bailout, A Great Opportunity. But with all going on, let me just say welcome to the program and what a joy to have you on.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. I'm so glad you invited me.
Oh, well.
Not everybody does, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you're a great inspiration to me because what we do keeps us young. I think you feel that way. I'm a few years behind you, but unfortunately, I grew up in Boston, but unfortunately, I didn't know about you back then in the 1950s. I think you were down south around that time. Was that right?
That's true. I went south in 1956.
The year that I finished college.
What's that?
That was the year that I finished college, 1956.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And then,
you're older than I thought.
I'm in my mid-70s, a few years your junior, but old enough to remember a good bit. Things were never perfect, as you point out so well in A People's History and in your article where you get into relating the present so-called bailout. I like what economist Michael Hudson calls it, a handout to the people who really caused the problem. The criminals who got us into this mess are being handed the billions of our tax dollars, and I refer to it as the looting of the national treasury to reward criminals for their fraud. And it really is the most massive fraud in the history of the country. But it's nothing new. And you document it, and you write about it, and you talk about all the times in the past that the government has handed out great largesse to big companies or business interests, and turned its back on the people.
Right. Yeah. And it's as you say, it's a long story. It goes back to the American Revolution. It goes back to the making of the Constitution, the first bailout was done immediately when the first Congress assembled, and it was really the desire of the founding fathers to create a strong central government that would be able to tax people and then have enough money to take care of the rich. That is, to bail them out of trouble, which was done almost immediately because there were all these speculators who held bonds that, the bonds represented loans to the government during the Revolution, but which were now worthless.
Let me interrupt a moment. The music means they're going to take a commercial break.
Oh,
let's do that, and we'll come right back.
Sure.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Howard Zinn. We're talking about Howard's work and his new article called Bailout, A Great Opportunity. Howard, let me quote you from the article, and you jump right back in. Near the beginning of it, you say, "Let's face a historical truth. We have never had a free market," in quotes. "We have always had government intervention in the economy, and indeed that intervention has been welcomed by the captains of finance and industry. These titans of wealth hypocritically warned against big government," in quotes, "but only when government threatened to regulate their activities or when it contemplated, God forbid my words, when it contemplated passing some of the nation's wealth onto the neediest people." And that's exactly what's going on now.
Well, do you know, Steve, if I said it, it must be true.
Well, it absolutely is true.
No, too, we've never had a free market. I always laugh when I hear that phrase, free market. And I always laugh when they say, well, we mustn't have big government, because we've always had big government. That's what the Constitution was set up for, to create big government, to create a strong central government that would serve the interests at that time of the slaveholders, the bondholders, the merchants, the Western expansionists. And one of the first things that Congress did, and before the break I started to talk about that, one of the first things that Congress did, the very first Congress, was to bail out the bondholders, these speculators who held bonds that were worthless until the government said, we are going to redeem them at full value. We're going to give you, we're going to bail you out. And how are we going to get the money to bail you out? We're going to tax the farmers, which is exactly what's happening now. You know, they're going to tax all the rest of us so that they can raise the money to pay the $700 billion to these financial institutions. And I was just reading this morning in an article that appeared in the Guardian of London. You know, it's interesting that you listening to your commercial, and one of them was talking about getting alternative news. Well, one way to get alternative news is to tune in on foreign newspapers. You know, the Guardian of London, Agence France-Presse, because these foreign newspapers very often will tell you things that American newspapers will not tell you. And this article in the Guardian of London talks about how of the $700 billion, 10% of it, that is $70 billion, is already being awarded to the CEOs and the people who have brought us ruin. It's awarded to them in the form of huge salaries and bonuses. So, of course, what I was suggesting in my article, instead of giving the $700 billion to these same financial institutions which have been greedy and speculative and have caused this crisis, take that $700 billion and give it directly to people who need it. Give it to the mortgage holders so they can pay their mortgage. Give it to people, well, in the form of jobs, people who are jobless. And, you know, the jobless rate in the United States has risen to its highest point in decades.
The irony of what you're saying is that the best way to get out of the mess that we're in is not to bail out companies that made whatever they did, mistakes, fraud, you name it, but to get people revived. If you want to get the economy revived, then you revive the people and give them the ability to have more income so they will spend it and grow the economy. And if you leave people just hanging in the wind, drifting in the wind, you can't grow the economy. You'll bail out these bankers that committed the fraud. You'll do nothing to help the economy. We'll sink into a longer, more protracted recession. God forbid something worse than that. And these people are smart. They know this. And they're not doing it. They pay lip service to helping homeowners by suggesting the mortgage holders do what you can to help these people out. Well, of course, that means nothing will be done. It's outrageous. Somebody described the bailout bill as a bill to create $700 billionaires.
Yeah, it's really well. I see a good side of it, Steve. Believe it or not.
Please tell me. Please tell me.
The good sides, you know. The good side of it is that this may be a wake up call for people. Next time they hear the phrase "free market," next time they hear, oh, we must leave it to private enterprise, or we mustn't have big government. Next time they hear those phrases, then people can just laugh, because obviously we have been fooled. You know, and it's not just the Republicans, it's the Democrats, too, who raised the cry of, it was Clinton who said, oh, the era of big government is over, well, which was nonsense. And as I say, we've always had big government, but it's been big government for the rich. When you get big government for the poor, in other words, when the government does what it did in the New Deal, when it gives people jobs or would create Social Security or unemployment insurance, then Medicare, Medicaid, as it was happened in the 60s, when that happens, then they cry, that's welfare for, and that's big government. But they don't make any outcry when the government saves the corporations, as it has done all through American history.
To put it another way, Howard, we have socialism for the rich and free market capitalism for the rest of us.
That's right. It's interesting. I think one of the good things that comes out of this is that people will think more clearly about what socialism is. You see, because if Obama says, I think I'm going to tax the rich more and I'm not going to tax people at the bottom 90% of the population, if he says that, and then McCain says, oh, that's socialism, well, and people say, really, is that socialism? Hey, then that's a good thing. Say, maybe socialism isn't so bad.
Oh, I agree with you, but I must say I don't trust him. It's one thing to make statements on the campaign trail, and I must say I think there's a very good chance on November 5th it will be, the headlines will read President-elect Obama. It's no sure thing.
No, it's not a sure thing at all, and so I certainly agree that we mustn't take Obama at his word, because the words that Obama utters, like the words of any presidential candidate utters, they're uttered in the heat of an election campaign, and they're designed to win voters, and you don't know what the president will do when he gets into office. And so far, Obama, well, he's been disappointing in many ways. And for instance, on his bailout, he and McCain agreed on his bailout.
And they voted for it.
And both of them. And Obama should have been saying, well, this is immodest of me, but I'll do it anyway. He should have been saying what I'm saying. Obama should have been saying, hey, why are we giving them $700 billion? Why not go back to the New Deal, which saved homeowners, which gave jobs to jobless people? The government under the New Deal created millions of jobs. If private enterprise had left people unemployed, private enterprise had left one-third of the nation unemployed. And what Roosevelt did was to say, no, the government is going to give you jobs. And, I mean, that saved the lives of millions of people.
You're old enough to remember the Depression. I remember it in the late 1930s, Howard, but I was a very small boy. And I know my parents struggled during those years, but they never let on to me. I have a younger brother who was born in 1938, so he has no recollection of the 1930s. But I began kindergarten in 1939, just around the time Hitler invaded Poland. I had no idea that there was anything wrong in the world or that there was any struggle going on. But those were pretty tough years for an awful lot of people. And the possibility that I don't think it will happen, but it is certainly possible we could be heading into another period like that now.
Well, it certainly is, unless something really fundamental is done to change the way our economic system functions. Because the way our economic system functions, and this is true not only in times of depression or panic like now, but it's true in what are called normal times. And the way the economy functions is that it takes care of the people at the top and leaves, you know, the 40 million people without health insurance. It leaves a situation where one out of every five children are born into poverty. And, I mean, this is in good times, in this, what's so-called normal times. In other words, the economy, because it's based on corporate profit, does not take care of people. When you base what is done in the economy on what is profitable for corporations, what you're saying is, well, if it's more profitable to build a new bank or a new football stadium, if it's more profitable for you to do that than to build low-cost housing, you're obviously not going to build low-cost housing. If it's more profitable for you to build nuclear bombs than to use the money to clean up the environment or to really rebuild the decaying infrastructure or to create a public transit system that will do away with so much dependence on automobiles and oils, you'll do what's most profitable. So we need to turn from an economy which is based on profit to an economy which is based on human need. What do human beings need? And to the extent that private enterprise can take care of that, fine. But if private enterprise can't, well, then the government has to step in and do the job.
And, of course, we had that during the New Deal and post-World War II. The European countries, Western European countries, had a good deal of that after all the suffering that they went through during the war. But then they began dismantling their system piece by piece. They have a lot more than we have, but they began dismantling it. And it's shocking. I just wonder whether with what's going on, they may reverse that a little bit. Let's take another break, and then we'll come right back.
Okay.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Howard Zinn is my guest. Howard, let me ask you, are you able to stay for a bit during the second half of the program?
I have about 10 more minutes.
Oh, okay. We'll finish this segment. We break at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
And then stay on for another 10 minutes, and I'll keep an eye on the clock, and I'll cut in and let you run off and take care of other business. But continue with what you were saying.
Yeah, I was talking about the need to make a fundamental change in the way the economic system works. Because we have to face the fact that the American economic system, which is hailed as, the great economic miracle of our time, we have the largest gross national product. I must also add the most gross national product. We produce an enormous amount of goods, but that enormous amount of goods is not well distributed among the population. And so the result is, although we are the wealthiest country in the world, we have people who are homeless. We have people without health care. We have children growing up poor. We have slums in our cities and ghettos. And all you have to do is walk through any big city. And on the one hand, you will see, very nice houses that people live in, upper class, even middle class. And then you will come to a part of the city where people live in poverty and where they can't pay their heating bills if it gets cold, where their homes are in disrepair, and they will have trouble paying the rent, and they may be evicted. In other words, we have a country which has developed its technology to the point where it can produce an enormous amount of goods and wealth, but then the way the economic system works, that wealth gravitates towards the top. And then if you add to that fact that we have a tax system which benefits the rich, the richest part of the population has gained over $1 trillion in the last 10, 12 years as a result of tax breaks. And by the way, the taxation rate for the upper classes is not something new. These tax cuts for the upper classes are not something new under Bush. They've been going on for decades under both Democratic and Republican administrations. And the Republican administrations are a little worse than Democrats, but both of them have contributed to a system which keeps lowering the taxes on corporations and maintaining taxes on people who can't afford taxes. The result being that you'll have billion-dollar corporations like paying, 35% in taxes, and the average middle-class family will pay 35%. So I
must say there aren't too many big corporations that pay that 35%, Howard, and it's shocking that a fair number of large corporations that show a profit and actually get a tax rebate.
No, Steve, you're absolutely right. There are corporations that don't pay any taxes.
Pay no taxes.
These corporations can hire very clever accountants who work things in the books to make it so that, well, that they don't have to pay any taxes. So you're absolutely right that very often these huge billion-dollar corporations will not pay any taxes. It will pay many, much less taxes than the average taxpayer. So there's something wrong with an economic system like this. I would say something else. We have 2 million people in prison. 2 million people, more than 2 million people in prison, the largest prison population in the world. Now, why is that? Now, who are these people? You know, these are people who became desperate, and they turned to thievery and stealing or drugs or whatever. Why this desperation? If you have a population in which millions and millions of people are desperate in the richest country in the world, that's a sign of sickness in the economy, sickness in the economic system, sickness in the political system. And that's why we need really fundamental change. And Obama so far has not shown a desire for fundamental change. Yes, he's going to make things better than they were under the Bush administration. But he's just going to bring us back to where we were before normally, which is an economic system which favors the rich, a political system which shuts out dissidents and third parties, the same old game.
We still continue with the terrible militarism, the two illegal wars going on. He wants to send more troops to Afghanistan. He wants to increase the size of the military. I had Edward Herman on the program 2 weeks ago, and he's for Obama, and for a very good reason. He really fears under a McCain presidency the possibility that this guy might start a nuclear war. And at least under Obama, there's certainly a far less likelihood that would happen.
It's interesting, yeah. I agree. I agree that Obama is more desirable than McCain, that it's less likely they'll get us into some major war, because after all, McCain supported, you know, this war in Iraq, supported the war in Afghanistan, supported all the military policies of the Bush administration. Now, he's a militarist. And so Obama is not going to be as bad as McCain. But the very fact that Obama, as you pointed out, wants to send troops to Afghanistan, wants to increase the size of the military, shows that Obama does not understand that the United States must stop it.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. I'm on with Howard Zinn. Oh, so many things going on, Howard, and so little time to talk about them all, but it really obsesses me. It drives me in what I do. I must tell you, I've said this before on air a couple of times, and people who know me know it. I got into this business of writing and radio by accident, and I never planned it. Most people retired like me do what my brother does. Enjoy the good life, whatever the good life is for people, whether it's tennis or travel or whatever it is. And I must say these things are of no interest to me whatsoever. And I did a lot of reading, and I've read nearly all your books. I've missed two or three of them, but all the others are sitting on my shelf. And I did a lot of reading, and you and others like you gave me the education that I never got back in school. I went to a couple of good schools, but I really feel that they cheated me. They didn't teach me what they should have taught me. They taught me to be a good citizen. And I want to be a good citizen, but I believe in the things that you believe in, the idea of equity in a country that really cares about all the people and not just the tiny sliver of the elite ones at the top. And I think I started writing by writing long letters to people, and I actually edited my letters. I wrote some that was so long, I had to go back and edit them. It was really like writing an article, except I did it all longhand, And then I rewrote them, just trying to get my thoughts down right. And again, I didn't plan this. It was all by accident. And the idea of hosting a radio program, I explained that to people. I was asked to do it, to do another program a couple of years ago. And I tell people that before my brain cells engaged, I said, sure. And then I thought about what I did, and I said, oh, my God, what have I got myself into? But I did it, and here I am now, and I must say I love it. I love it. And when people ask me to come on and talk about these things, because it's so important.
Well, I think we depend very much on programs like yours, Steve, to get alternative information. You know, I'm glad that there are programs like yours, radio stations around the country, independent radio stations, Democracy Now, Pacifica stations. I'm glad that we have these alternative sources because we can't simply depend on the major media to tell us the truth. I'm very glad you're doing this, Steve. Well, I'm going to have to leave because I have scheduled you from 1 to 1:30, and I have to be elsewhere.
Oh, I will let you go. I did not want to keep you any longer than you can stay, but I hope you'll come back and we can do it again. Helen.
I'll be glad to, Steve.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck to you.
My best to you.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it. So many issues. I put out a new article today. By the way, if anybody wants to call in, I generally stay away from phone calls, listeners calling in, because there's so much to discuss with guests, and I really want to give them as much time as possible to pass on all the important information that we can get into an hour to people listening. Now we have a portion of the program from now to the top of the hour. And if anybody wants to call in with a question or a comment, I'd be delighted to get into a conversation with them. I'll mention that I've written 6 articles now on the current financial crisis. I'm sure I'm not done because this is major, major stuff. And just where this thing will go and how it will end up, nobody really knows for sure. But, of course, the truth about it is something that you'll never get in the mainstream. And even now, very reluctantly, mainstream commentators, especially in the business news, will admit that we have an economic problem. At the same time, they'll downplay it and they'll say that, maybe the worst is past and we'll get into the new year and we'll work through this and we'll have a recession that maybe won't be too bad and we'll get through it and then we'll have a glorious period of reemergence and growth at the end of it. Well, I think that's a bunch of baloney because they really got us into a mess this time. The truth about this, and my first article explained a lot of it. My first article that I only wrote about 4 or 5 weeks ago was called Grand Theft America. What's going on is the greatest heist in the history of the country. It was planned. The panic was planned. But I really believe it got out of hand, not to the extent that it's gotten to the point where it's almost like a nuclear plant melting down, and maybe no one is sure just exactly whether they contain this thing. And if you have a core meltdown on a nuclear power plant, heaven help anything within a good number of miles around that plant. I live in a using that analogy, the city I live in, Chicago, maybe the most nuclearized city in the world. I'm surrounded by 11 nuclear power plants, I think, given a 100-mile or so circumference. And if one of those, I use this line in a couple of my articles, if one of those plants ever has a core meltdown and Chicago was downwind from that plant, then Chicago will be irradiated forever. Everybody will have to leave the city, leave everything behind except what you can carry with you, getting out as quickly as possible. And you can never come back, and Chicago will never be habitable again. That's what a core meltdown does. Well, a core economic meltdown is not quite the same. But we went through a Great Depression in this country. I was born in 1934. I was too young to have any understanding of what was happening. It was pretty rough for an awful lot of people. Quarter of the population was unemployed. A good many more than that really went through very, very hard times. I know my parents went through hard times. They pretty well concealed it from me. So I just had no idea what was happening. When Roosevelt talked about so many millions of people ill-housed, ill-fed, ill-clothed, he wasn't kidding. It was the case. And they had to come up with something. Things were so bad that there were really rumblings beneath the surface and a good number above the surface where the powers that be. Roosevelt, by the way, campaigned in 1932. His platform really was not much different than a Republican platform, which was really kind of silly because we were really in a mess by that time. The stock market crashed in October 1929, and by July 1932, it had lost 89% of its value. There was a Dow Jones back then. There was no S&P. There was no NASDAQ. The Dow Jones lost 89% of its value. I don't think anyone is suggesting that today, but if it happened once, it certainly could happen today. We had different problems then than we have today. Potentially, the ones we have today are a lot more serious. There is much stronger action being taken. The problem is too much of it is the wrong action. If you don't help the people, if you don't get money in people's pockets, if you don't keep people from losing their homes, losing their jobs, then the economy is going to keep sinking lower and lower and lower. And if you take all your resources and you just hand it out to make rich people richer and not put it back into growing the economy, then that's a handout, and that's not an economic rescue package. We have a caller. Go ahead. Somebody on the line? Somebody calling in?
Hello.
Oh, yes, please go ahead.
Bless you, and thank you so very much. Wanted to thank all of you for your excellence. We were hoping that there would be an opportunity to thank you ahead of time, but even the moment is appreciated. I had a specific question in regard to the rest of the non-performing blood gold contract,
non-performing gold contract
on these wars. How of never a more do you imagine it would be, considering we didn't have such wonderful and beneficent guidance or spiritual? If there would be never a more or a never again, do you imagine that they actually do believe that they control every wickedness and that they will not be chargeable against war crimes?
Oh, are you the one who emailed me? Are you the person who emailed me and asked me this?
We've tried others before, and yes, but yes.
Oh, I absolutely believe that the chances of anybody being prosecuted are very, very slim. Occasionally something happens. If you go back in U.S. history, you find examples of criminality at high levels in government. The people were prosecuted, and they paid for it. The Teapot Dome scandal back during the Harding administration, there were people who were prosecuted for that. But it's pretty tough to do, especially in this day and age. I mean, look at the crimes that have been committed, the financial ones, just one part. I mean, look at the war crimes that have been committed. I mean, egregious war crimes.
At every level,
is
tragedy.
Go back in history. A piece of information that I've mentioned in a few of my articles, I think it's the most shocking fact about this country I ever heard. And Ward Churchill documented it in one of his books. The fact that this country, since before inception, has been at war every year in our history with no exception. Not a single year has gone by since before 1776 that we have not been at war either with internal and or external enemies. I don't know that there's any other nation on earth that can make that statement. It is really shocking, and that's aside from police brutality and the things that go on at the local level. I mean, this is really shocking. Has anybody ever been brought to justice for being a war criminal? I know Noam Chomsky says that every U.S. president since World War II is a war criminal. Absolutely right, every single one of them. Well, I go back and I say every single one of them, period, has been a war criminal, including Washington, including Lincoln, including all of them. Just some of them are worse criminals than others. I sure take Lincoln to George Bush. But it is really shocking. I mean, have any of these people ever been asked to answer for their crimes? No. Very sadly, Bush, Cheney, the Wall Street shysters, they'll walk away scot-free.
Well, those domestic terrorists...
You could call the Wall Street shysters domestic terrorists, absolutely. They literally stole trillions of dollars. And now, as I said earlier, the Treasury is being looted. In other words, the taxpayers are being charged to put billions of dollars in their pocket, and the 700 plus another 150, making it 850, that's a down payment. We're talking trillions before this thing is over.
Exactly.
And there already have been trillions, because on one day, the government committed $5 trillion in one day to taking over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Exactly.
They should let all these companies that committed fraud or just made bad mistakes, they should either let them go under, or they should nationalize them and let the people own them. If they take over a Fannie and a Freddie, then we should own Fannie and Freddie and then not give it back to the private interests. But that's not the way our system works.
Well,
it's pretty outrageous. When are people going to get mad enough to say no more?
Pray.
The topic of the first hour. Do you agree?
Bless you. Yes. If you would, possibly sometime, even as you continue to cause that kind of coalescence, concretized constitutional content of history, you have long won the battle of the info wars, and certainly caused that paradigm of millennia to occur. Bless you.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. We all need to keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening. Every single thing going on in the country today affects us in one way or another, and it disturbs me so much that we have great powers of distraction in this country. We're distracted by football, by right now the World Series. We're distracted every day of the week. You could almost say around the clock, by shopping. We're distracted by all the wrong things. There's a great quote that I forget the precise words, but an economist no longer with us, by a man named Paul Baran, where he complained that people worry most about the things that really don't matter at all, and not about the things that matter most, like health care and clean air and clean water and safe food to eat. I mean, the most education. I mean, the most important things in our lives people don't worry about, unless there's something vital that you don't have. If you go hungry, then you worry about where is the next meal going to come from. But it's shocking that people should worry about the latest fashions or who's going to win some silly ball game. I mean, who gives a damn who wins some silly ball game? You know, if you were earning a living by it, that's one thing. But you don't get paid all this money for these silly games. But they convince you that it's so important to tune in and to focus on that. And what they're really doing is keeping you from focusing on the most important thing, the power of bread and circuses. They did it back in ancient Rome. Bread and circuses to keep people from focusing on how the state was harming the ordinary people. Well, we've perfected it in the modern age, especially here in this country, the power of propaganda. And we need to break free from that. We need to really understand the things going on that hurt us directly. That's really the way to think about it. What the devil is going on that really is hurting my life, that's hurting my future, my kids, my family, my friends, my relatives? I would say virtually everything. Occasionally somebody asks me, why don't you write about something good that's going on? And my answer is, well, when I find it, I'm going to write about it. I guess I'm like Diogenes, looking for an honest man. I'm looking for some of the good things. Oh, sure, there are good things going on. But we have a deeply corrupted government. We have a corrupted government. You basically could call the alliance, the nexus between the type of government we have, and it doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican, it's basically a one-party state with two wings. Gore Vidal's description of what's going on. He calls it either the money party or the property party, and that's basically what it was. Anybody who thinks that we had it good during the Clinton years, they weren't paying attention because we had it very bad during the Clinton years. And it just got worse after 9/11, a hideous story that's been discussed on the NewsHour. One day, hopefully, the full truth about it will come out. But it really unleashed the monsters on us to do any damn thing they want to, create a police state at home, fight illegal foreign wars, give ourselves the right, if we so choose, to wage a preemptive nuclear war, including against a non-nuclear state, against any state, is outrageous. I hear that music. We have to take a break, and we'll be right back. If anybody else wants to call in, please do us. We'll be right back. In the NewsHour, let me just finish up with a few comments about globalresearch.ca. I'm on the website right now. Go to the website and see the kind of material on it. The editor and my co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky, he puts out such incredible material. I just can't imagine not paying very close attention to everything he writes. He's got a new article that was posted today called Wall Street's Trojan Horse. Take a look at it. And another one he wrote, Who is Behind the Financial Meltdown? The fact that financial markets are heavily manipulated. If you think those movements up and down every day are random, think again. There's nothing free about the free market. It's all orchestrated. It's all rigged. So the insiders pull in big profits when it's going up, and they probably pull in bigger ones when it's going down. So they love this stuff. They absolutely love it. But there's so much more up. My newest article, I take aim at Alan Greenspan. I've done it before. With a disqualifier, I call him public enemy number one, aside from war and peace and geopolitics and affairs of state. I'm focusing strictly on the financial crisis. I call him public enemy number one. He has immiserated more millions of people, I think, financially than any other human being. I mean, he has just laid waste in so many ways to the people that the financial crisis now may be the worst of all. But he's done a lot more as Fed chairman for 18 years and before that in government. And I've written about him a few times to explain exactly what he's done. He's an outrageous guy. Really criminal activities that instead of being punished, he's held up as an icon of society. There's a wonderful article by Ellen Brown who will be on this program in a couple of weeks. Gulf Financial Meltdown, the greatest transfer of wealth in history. It's a terrific article. Ellen Brown does great writing on the economy, anything Michael Hudson writes. He'll be on a future program with me in November. He really dissects the economy so brilliantly. He's also a financial historian, and he goes into so much in great detail, but he'll tell you what's happening. He'll explain it to you, and it will read exactly the opposite is what you get in the mainstream. Anybody listening to this program knows that if you want not to know what's going on, then tune in the CNNs of the world, the BBCs of the world, the National Public Radios of the world, the PBSs of the world, and they will fill your head with mush. And if you want to know what's going on, you go to alternative programming like this. You go to websites like globalresearch.ca, and boy, we better do it because it really bothers me greatly. Just where we're going, it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. And if there's enough misery, and the potential that will happen is very great, and enough people get angry enough, well, you heard, and I've written just a tiny little bit about, that the U.S. military is now deployed on U.S. streets. They can bring a lot more of them out there. And the brigade that was sent back to the U.S. October 1 is a combat brigade. A combat brigade. A combat brigade is trained to kill. So, in other words, if push comes to shove, they could be ordered to kill U.S. citizens because they're angry that their government betrayed them, and they're protesting. The centers aren't treated well in this country. They never have been, and I've got more writing that I'll be doing on that ahead. You might watch for it. It'll be up on Global Research in days or weeks ahead. So much trouble, so many things to think about, so much of it harming us. And we need to protect ourselves because if we do it, no one's going to do it for us. Change only comes from the bottom up, from the grassroots. If we never complain, those at the top will just sit back merrily enjoying life and making us pay their profit at our expense. A very fast 2 hours. They always go by much too fast. I appreciate you tuning in. Come on back next week. I promise you another good program with two terrific guests and great subjects to talk about. See you next week.